Oh boy, here we go. Welcome back to the Below Average Joe's MMA show. We are here on this Monday morning to discuss UFC 300, the most monumental, historic, biggest card in UFC history has come to a close. The fight hangover is hitting harder than any fight hangover ever has before, but that will not stop me from giving my thoughts and everything that I can give, at least, to this podcast episode. So we will start with UFC 300, three title fights, so many ranked fighters, so many amazing performances, victories, knockouts, submissions, you name it. UFC 300 quite literally had everything. It somehow exceeded expectations. And when those types of things happen with these, you know, very special, not once in a lifetime cards, but once in a blue moon type cards, it truly is special to be an MMA fan. And so we're going to talk about that. We have massive fight announcements that came in the UFC 300 post-fight press conference that I will talk about at the end of today's show. And I will briefly touch on the PFL because, yes, the PFL had their second event of 2024, the season, I should say, on Friday night. And it was honestly one of the best top-to-bottom cards in terms of action in the cage that they've ever had. So I will give them their flowers as well. But it starts in Las Vegas, Nevada. UFC 300, the title fights are up first. Twelve professional mixed martial arts fights, eight UFC fights, five former champions beaten, two championships won in two different weight classes. Alex Pereira's run that we are seeing dating back to November of 2021 when he debuted in the UFC is unlike anything we have ever seen in this sport before. Poatan, Alex Pereira has defended the light heavyweight championship for the first time successfully after knocking out Jamahal Hill 3 minutes and 14 seconds into the very first round of the UFC 300 main event. This was one of the coldest knockouts that I have ever seen. Jamahal Hill landed a groin shot to Alex Pereira as Herb Dean came to step in to halt the action for Pereira to recover, fix his cup, whatever the case may have been. Pereira quite literally never took his eyes off of Jamahal Hill, put his hand to the side to fend off Herb Dean and say, no, don't come in here. I'm good. I promise you I'm good. And within 10 seconds of that happening, he flatlined Jamahal Hill and knocked him out cold to defend the light heavyweight championship. He is now 3-0 in the UFC light heavyweight division after a 4-1 run in the middleweight division after becoming a champion by knocking out Israel Adesanya, losing the rematch to Izzy, jumping up to 205 pounds, beating Jan Blachowicz, beating Jiří Procházka to become champion, and knocking out Jamahal Hill to retain his championship and spoil the return of Jamahal Hill coming back from a ruptured Achilles that had him sidelined since last January. And so there's not a lot to talk about other than that's what happened. 3 minutes, feeling out process, couple shots landed here and there, but not a ton of action. As many expected, I think the first round was expected to be a little slower. Two great strikers with one-punch knockout power that can come at any time. They were feeling each other out. Pereira landed the final blow that ended this monumental night in Las Vegas. And to be quite frank, that means there's more to talk about in the aftermath because let's go back about a month, maybe a little bit longer than that ago. Alex Pereira initiated the thought of if he can win at UFC 300, come out relatively unscathed, he wanted to turn around just 3 weeks later, UFC 301, I believe it's May 4th, if I'm not mistaken, in Brazil and fight again there. Well, step one of that plan is complete. He won at UFC 300. Step two, he came out unscathed, hardly took any damage whatsoever. He got a victory. He defended a title. He's one of the fastest growing superstars in mixed martial arts today. And so what does this guy do? He gets on the post-fight press conference with Joe Rogan and he sticks to his word. He says, yes, I know it would be hard to get a fight promoted in 3 weeks, but I want to fight in Brazil, UFC 301. Let's be honest, that card could use it. Right now, the headlining spot, in no slight toward them, is the flyweight championship fight between Alexandre Pantoja and Steve Urseg. The co-main event came out of left field. Jose Aldo coming out of retirement to fight Jonathan Martinez. A couple other ranked fighters throughout the card, but it's nothing compared to all of the pay-per-views that we've seen, honestly, thus far in 2024. Even if you exclude 299 and 300, 298 was a pretty great card on paper. 297 had a lot of decent fights on paper, two title fights. Here we are now, Brazil, 3 weeks from UFC 300 that happened April 13th. Alex Pereira wants on that card, and he wants on that card at heavyweight. He wants to go win a third UFC championship, something that no one has ever done before. We've seen people win belts in two weight classes like Alex. We've seen people win belts in two weight classes simultaneously at the same time, like Daniel Cormier, Amanda Nunes, Conor McGregor, etc., etc. But the class gets lower. It gets a little bit more rare, right? But no one has ever gone on to win three belts in three weight classes. We've seen people win fights in three different weight classes, like Jessica Andrade, who competed on this card and won, like Conor McGregor, who just got announced to be fighting in June. That'll be a whole other piece on this Below Average Joe's show. But no one has won three championship fights in three weight classes. No one has came close to winning three championship fights in three different weight classes. This is the closest that we have ever been and probably will be for a long time to come. The UFC needs to capitalize on this right now. And this is why. You have a heavyweight division that is in complete and utter limbo. Your undisputed champion is recovering from a torn pectoral muscle. He's getting into trouble outside of the octagon again. I don't want to get into all of it, John Jones. He's said his piece and said what actually happened. Go down that rabbit hole and find the information. But regardless, it is more negative headlines on the outside of the octagon for John Jones, something that has really damaged his career. You can't take away from what he's done in the cage. I've been on this show and said he's the GOAT, but outside of the cage, the antics have hurt him in terms of his stardom, his name, what have you. But that is your undisputed champion right now, and he is not active. He cannot fight yet, which means we have an interim champion. That is Tom Aspinall. He won the interim title in November by knocking out Sergey Pavlovich, and he's sitting on the sideline with nothing to do. No opponent in sight. He can't fight John because he's injured. Stipe doesn't want to fight Tom Aspinall because he wants to fight John Jones. Ciryl Gane apparently doesn't want to fight Tom Aspinall from what I'm hearing in his interview most recently on the MMA Hour. Tom Aspinall doesn't say no to fights. He took the fight against the most dangerous man in the heavyweight division and won on 2 weeks' notice. And the photo of Tom Aspinall sitting front row watching Alex Pereira enter the cage is ice cold. Pereira had the coldest knockout I've seen in quite some time. This photo is ice cold as well. And let us not forget, before the fight with Jamahal Hill and Alex Pereira got booked for UFC 300, Alex Pereira was already hinting at maybe doing a third weight class, a third championship. Tom Aspinall was entertaining that, going back and forth on social media. The built-in storyline is there. You have two fighters that clearly will not say no to this, as it will come with a large payday, I would have to imagine as well. It's history for Alex Pereira. It's a legacy fight already, really, for Tom Aspinall if he can get this type of victory. All signs are a go. No damage taken from Alex Pereira. No weight cut. He can just compete openly at heavyweight. He came in at like 230 to 240 pounds at UFC 213. Tom Aspinall isn't the biggest heavyweight in the world. He's the 250 range. I mean, it's not like he's capping the scale and cutting weight to make 265. We've really never even seen anything like this happen. If we have, it's a very far and few between. The most recent example that I can think of goes back to 2020 when Davison Figueiredo in November 21st beat Alex Perez, turned around December 12th of 2020 and faced Brandon Moreno in the first of their four fight rivalry. This won't affect Pereira at light heavyweight. He can still keep his belt and come back down. This is a chance to have a one-off humongous fight. Money on the line, legacy on the line, titles on the line. If you're the UFC, I think you need to make do everything in your power to make this fight happen. And pardon me if my voice keeps giving out. I've coming off of a little bit of a sore throat illness from last weekend, yelling, losing my voice during the fight card on Saturday night. So pardon me. And I'm just getting excited because this is a very special fight, something that I think the UFC really needs to do to keep this hot streak going. You know, again, every pay-per-view this year has been good. 297, 298, 299, 300. Now you really can bump 301 to compete with these other cards because 302 in June is insane already. And UFC 303 at the end of June is absolutely bonkers. So from the main event, we go to the co-main event. Zhang Weili, the women's strawweight champion of the world, has defended her title for the second time. She has beaten Yan Xiaonan. She is 25-3, 9-2 in the UFC, a two-time strawweight champion, title defenses in both of her title reigns. Zhang Weili is the best female fighter in the UFC right now. She's won four fights in a row since her skid to Rose Namajunas, two finishes, two very convincing, dominant performances in her decision victories over these last two. Lemos was unbelievable. In this fight with Yan Xiaonan, outside of a couple moments where Yan landed some shots that seemed to not necessarily hurt Zhang Weili a ton, but it did stun her, knock her down, knock her back. Take those moments away, Zhang Weili not only won a decision, but she also put Yan Xiaonan to sleep with a submission. Now, I believe this came at the end of round one, a rear naked choke where, I mean, it was all but over. Yan Xiaonan, to her credit, never tapped, never quit in this fight. And what it was really a great performance from her for the moments that she had offensively, like I mentioned here at the beginning, and defensively here with these submissions because she never tapped, she never gave up, but she got put to sleep. She was asleep at the end of round one, and somehow the fight went to round two. Somehow the fight ended up going all five rounds. There was literally a moment when they go to the corners in between rounds on the broadcast where you hear someone in her corner or the cut man, someone clearly said, we have to wake her up. Yan Xiaonan was asleep from the choke of Zhang Weili, but the fight didn't end. We moved around two, much more the same success, I should say, for Zhang Weili. She then puts her in an arm triangle choke submission, and Yan Xiaonan still did not quit, still did not tap. She took a ton of unanswered strikes. This fight could have been stopped with the submission at the end of the first and with these unanswered strikes. And if Yan Xiaonan would have tapped, that would make three instances here. Unbelievable heart and grit. Usually when you're talking about that in the aftermath of a fight, it doesn't necessarily come off quite as well for the fighter. But Yan Xiaonan did have her moments in the fight, so my hat is off to her because this was a monumental fight in itself. I don't think people realize how historic this was. This is nothing that has ever happened in UFC history. Two Chinese fighters competing for a UFC championship. So it's very exciting to see what will come from Zhang Weili because fight by fight, she continues to get better. Yes, she had a couple hiccups here and there, but for the most part, this was a very convincing, dominant performance. Maybe I shouldn't use the word dominant because that is clearly what happened with her and Lemos. Let's just say it was a very convincing victory nonetheless. And you look at the division and you kind of wonder who could be next. Jessica Andrade, you know, Zhang Weili is already beaten, but that was a few years ago. Andrade did get a big win on this very same card. She's on a two-fight win streak. But I think it is clear. I think that when Tatiana Suarez is finally healthy and able to compete, you have to run this fight for the strawweight championship. If it wasn't for Tatiana Suarez's history of injuries, very severe injuries at that, she would have already and maybe even still be a champion in the UFC. I don't think people realize how elite of a fighter that Tatiana is. And Zhang Weili is so like wonderfully well-rounded. It makes that fight absolutely incredible as a fan of the sport and of this division to see it continue to flourish right now. That's the fight you have to do next. Tatiana's not booked because she had a fight that had to be scrapped. So you got to do this. Zhang Weili, Tatiana Suarez, 115-pound title next. Oh, boy. And now that means we have to talk about the third and final title fight on this card. The BMF Championship, Justin Gaethje, the reigning coming into this card, BMF champion after knocking out Dustin Poirier last July with a brutal head kick, entered to defend the BMF title, something that we had not seen before, against Max Blessed Holloway, the number two ranked lightweight in the world versus the number two ranked featherweight in the world. BMF title on the line, lightweight title shot on the line, featherweight title shot on the line, legacy on the line, and it delivered. Max Holloway had one of the best performances that we've ever seen, and probably the best performance that he has had since his masterclass that he put on in 2021 against Calvin Kattar. That's an all-timer for sure, 50-42 scorecard, for example. But this right here, to come up a weight class after we've already seen him falter once before in a fight for the interim lightweight title against Dustin Poirier in 2019, that was a unanimous 49-46 across the board for Poirier. He comes back here, this time not on short notice, this time with months and months to prepare his body to make this move, and it was noticeable. Max Holloway was much stronger, much more physically, like you could just see it in his legs specifically. His shoulders looked big, everything. He looked, quite frankly, like a lightweight. And he put on an incredible shutout, borderline shutout. He lost round four. But outside of that, this was the least amount of damage that Max has taken in quite some time, even in fights that he's been finishing, even in a Korean zombie fight. He took less damage here in 24 minutes and 59 seconds against Justin Gaethje, the most dangerous, powerful man in the lightweight division. But Max didn't just win a decision, a very clean, dominant decision. He points at the ground like he's been known to do time and time again. We think back to when he fought Ricardo Lamos, where at the end of the fight, he's pointing at the ground, swinging and banging for the final 10 seconds, see if someone falls. If not, we go out on our shield, and we are animals. We are gladiators. He does the same thing here in a fight that he was clearly, it was over. It was won. It would have been 4-1 on all three judges' scorecards for Max Holloway, hand-raised BMF champion. Do what you got to do. Call your shot in the post-fight interview, like I will talk about in just a second. And Max instead decides to point to the ground and swang and bang rock'em sock'em robots with the most dangerous hitter in the lightweight division, Justin Gaethje. Not only does he hardly get hit during those 10 seconds, but he lands one of the most devastating right hands I have ever seen and flatlines Justin Gaethje face first on the canvas. It's one of the most amazing moments that I've seen in my years of watching this sport. I've been watching it consistently, borderline every single week since 2016, 2017, especially 2020 when the podcast started. And even longer, if you want to talk casually, as a child, when my dad would have people over and I was just a little kid watching Chuck Liddell and Randy Couture, Rashad Evans, Rich Franklin, the list goes on, GSP, Matt Hughes. This moment right here was one of the most unbelievable moments that I've ever witnessed. And I got to experience it with my best friends sitting next to me. It is a moment I will remember forever. I am a Max Holloway fan through and through. I've got hoodies, t-shirts, headbands, posters, articles written about him. I've got a skateboard autographed by the man. And this was absolutely, I'm close to at a loss for words. The amount of times that I've went back last night and today and seeing that moment of the knockout land and the celebration and the crowd, and he embraces his family and his wife. It is like if there was a way to capture that video from up in the second level, the high quality video, and put it in a frame, I would do it. It was that unbelievable to do that in a card of this magnitude, in a fight of this magnitude. Max Holloway was the biggest winner of UFC 300, and probably just like he just continues to build his stardom. He continues to build a legacy that is close to unmatched in these weight classes, and just in general in the sport. And then he gets on the mic. He says, "I'm him." He calls out Ilia Topuria, who witnessed this front row, and he looked astonished at what he had witnessed. He calls out Islam Makhachev. He wants to fight everybody. He earned a title shot in two different weight classes. I kept saying it going into this, that if he were to win, he could be a number one contender rightfully in two weight classes. Now we know what's happening at 155. We'll talk about it at least. I haven't talked about it yet here. Islam versus Dustin. That's what we're getting June 1st for the lightweight title. It's going to be Max Holloway, Ilia Topuria, and my goodness, it looks like it's going to be in Spain. This could be the biggest featherweight title fight in the history of the division. And we're talking about a division that's had Jose Aldo, Conor McGregor, Alexander Volkanovski, Max Holloway. Now we have Ilia Topuria, who I don't think people here in the States anyway realize just how massive of a star he is. And Max Holloway is one of the biggest stars in the game right now. It's going to be fireworks. It's going to be an electric fight that has no shot of being boring. Gold is going to be on the line. Potentially the first UFC trip to Spain. Everything you want in a championship, everything you want in a big fight feel is coming next. Topuria versus Holloway. And now that we are done with the UFC 300 title fights, we're going to jump in to the main card, two more fights, and the entire prelims. Let's hit it all. Not necessarily fast, but let's just run through this, talk about what we saw and what is next. We start in the lightweight division. Charles Oliveira, Armand Saryukian. Dana White said when the fight was announced that it was a number one contender fight, and it turns out it wasn't. Dustin Poirier is next, June 1st for the title, but Armand Saryukian extends his win streak, gets the biggest win of his career, and surely does cement himself to maybe not have to fight again and get the winner of Makhachev versus Poirier. Let's get into it. Charles Oliveira was coming for blood. He almost put out Armand Saryukian within minutes of the very first round, had him in one of the tightest guillotine chokes I've ever seen, and then ends the fight in a D'Arce choke, but sandwiched in between was the high-level skill set that Armand Saryukian has. He put it on display once again with dominant grappling, nasty ground and pound. He is so high level. He's 22-3. He's won four fights in a row, two of them by vicious knockout and two by decision over Izmagulov and Charles Oliveira. Back-to-back biggest wins of his career by knocking out Dariush and defeating Charles here at UFC 300. He didn't get the title shot. It was clear that the UFC was ready to go with Islam versus Dustin. They just wanted to wait and see. Maybe Justin Gaethje will get a big win. Maybe the winner of Oliveira Armand will be a convincing big finish. Neither of those happened. Therefore, boom, at the press conference, they announce Islam versus Dustin Poirier, June 1st, UFC 302 in New Jersey. I would like to think that Armand can wait in the wings, maybe even be a backup fighter, weigh in if need be. It won't be that drastic of a calendar difference, a schedule difference. We see him have a training camp and fight April 13th. Dustin and Islam are going to fight a month and a half, seemingly. So that's not terribly crazy for Armand to maybe fight the winner of that in October, November, December. I think that is very doable. So my hat is off to Armand for surviving these submissions and having big moments of his own And Charles Oliveira, man, I know I don't get as in-depth on the losers for the most part, week to week, but he's never in a boring fight. There's no way that you can't love every single time Charles Oliveira has a fight, gets into that octagon, faces his opponents on stage for a face-off and removes the sunglasses, shows up in the suits and the swagger, the confidence, the blonde hair with his team. There's only one Charles Oliveira, but UFC 300 belonged to Arman Tsarukyan. Bo Nickel got another stoppage victory, this time not in the first round. He actually did go to the second round for the very first time in his 6-0 professional career. He is 3-0 in the UFC. He went 2-0, of course, on Dana White's Contender Series. This victory came via submission against Cody Brundage. So a gradual step up here in competition, and it showed. Bo did not look like a dominant force as he has in all of these other fights. He took a couple shots. The takedowns didn't come as easy. The submissions didn't come as quickly. So kudos to Cody Brundage for surviving, 8 minutes and 38 seconds. That's longer than anyone has done before by quite a lot of time, as a matter of fact, as crazy as that sounds. But Bo Nickel remains perfect. And, a lot of people are hating on him. This is what the UFC is pushing him. And boy, what's Bo going to say no to getting a high-profile fight on pay-per-view cards back-to-back-to-back? Of course he's not going to do that. Opening the pay-per-view card of UFC 300, the biggest card ever, of course he's not going to say no to that. So I don't think there's necessarily a reason to hate on him as much as people probably do. Yes, he's a little bit cocky, but most of that seems to just be confidence. And I can respect a boat of confidence in this sport because, after all, you need it. If you go into these fights not being confident, it's over before the fight even starts. And that's what I think separates Bo Nickel from the opponents he's faced thus far. But middleweight is not that deep of a division. It is not the most stacked division in the UFC by any means. Therefore, it does not take that many fights before Bo, if he continues to win, becomes a part of the top 15. He mentioned Anthony Fluffy Hernandez. He mentioned Roman Kopylov. Kudos to him. That is a great step up. That is actually a very big step up, either guy, from Cody Brundage, Jamie Pickett, Val Woodburn, etc. And so kudos to him for having those call outs. And I am excited to see what will the UFC do here. After they got to watch this round and a half of action from Bo, will they take a leap as big as Anthony Hernandez or Roman Kopylov, or they maybe do one or two more outside looking in, 20 to 30 range ranked middleweights before they really take the next steps with Bo Nickel? Time will tell, but we'll probably get to see Bo in the octagon at least one more time in 2024, which could set up potentially a big 2025. And we now go to the prelim headliner. Holy moly. I didn't think this fight was going to be bad, but I didn't think it was going to be this damn good. Jiří Prochazka finishes Alexander Rakic 3 minutes and 17 seconds into the second round. These guys were going toe-to-toe for 15 minutes, for 8 minutes and 17 seconds. Rakic is still, to me, one of the most underrated fighters, for sure, in the light heavyweight division and probably in the entire UFC. Everybody knows what Jiří Prochazka brings to the table. Samurai warrior. That is his skill set. And what does he do? He fights on, no legs, essentially. Rakic tore down both of his legs with the calf kick. Rakic landed big shots, but Jiří just fought through it all like it was nothing and inevitably knocks out Rakic in round number two. This was number two versus number five. Seemed like a pretty clear-cut number one contender fight to me. If we're going to get Alex Pereira moving to heavyweight next month, then Jiří has time to recover. And then we can run that rematch back maybe at the end of the year, Prochazka versus Pereira 2. I know Magomed Ankalaev is out there as well as a guy that probably should get the next title fight. He beat Johnny Walker in the very first event of the year. So in the meantime, if Pereira does this business at heavyweight, maybe they run Jiří versus Ankalaev. That's a fight that hasn't happened. Please don't do it for an interim belt. We don't need to do that. But Magomed should probably get the next title fight. He doesn't have the best relationship with the UFC and with the fans. Everybody seems to love Jiří. Interesting circumstance. Maybe they just run Jiří versus Ankalaev in a true guaranteed number one contender fight, huh? Aljamain Sterling, unfortunately, in his featherweight debut, had the worst fight of the entire UFC 300 card. Very dull. Not a lot to take away from it. He just grappled Calvin Kattar, held him up against the fence. Really never did much. He didn't land a lot of ground and pound. He didn't have a lot of submission threats. He did tombstone pile drive Calvin Kattar at the end of the fight, which was pretty damn cool. I'm not hating on Aljo. I was a guy that was, you know, along with Noah, when he was on the show, we were saying for people to give Sterling his flowers. You know, that bantamweight championship run that he had fight by fight got progressively more impressive. And I think he started to grow a little bit more of a fandom. But, you know, he got beat by Sean O'Malley, which then in return just leads to a lot of haters. And then, I don't know, it's always just been weird for Aljo. He is an elite talent, and you can't take that away from him. I got to say, yeah, the fight was lackluster, but he dominated and he looks great at 145 pounds. His physique is fantastic. And so for that reason alone, I am excited to at least see what could be next, who could be next. You know, Calvin Kattar was number 8 in the division. I got a match, and I'm going to say it right here, right now. Because I don't view the UFC as, you know, launching Aljo very far, unfortunately, up the rankings after this fight. Diego Lopez, I'm going to skip the Kayla Harrison-Holly fight and come back to that because I'm going to pair these two featherweight fights together. Diego Lopez has won 3 straight fights, 3 straight first-round finishes after nearly beating Movsar Evloev in his UFC debut on short notice. He's looked amazing and flawless ever since, and he steamrolled Sadiq Youssef, the number 13 ranked featherweight in the world, like quite literally no one has ever done before. Diego Lopez is going to enter the top 15, at least be number 13, but I think after that performance gets a little bit higher. Give me Diego Lopez versus Aljamain Sterling in a 5-round featherweight main event right now. So with the featherweights out of the way, let's jump back to the women's bantamweight division. Kayla Harrison, Ohio's very own, stand up. Welcome to the UFC. As someone from Ohio that's followed Kayla for years and knows very well of her upbringing, this was amazing to see a 2-time Olympic gold medalist, a 2-time PFL champion, now transition into the UFC, come down to a weight class she's never competed at before, and only 1 time competed close to it at featherweight in Invicta in 2020, makes the weight, proves the haters wrong, beats Holly Holm, a former champion, finishes Holly Holm, made it look easy from start to finish until the 1 minute and 47 second mark of the second round. Kayla Harrison is here. She's here for a very fun ride. Maybe not a very long ride, but a fun ride while she's here. Her next fight's for the bantamweight title of the world. Juliana, I'm sorry, but it's not going to happen. The UFC is giving Kayla Harrison the fight with Raquel Pennington. And if Kayla wins that fight, Amanda Nunes is coming out of retirement. The former training partners and friends will clash in one of the biggest fights at bantamweight in a long time. Amanda Nunes was on Twitter sharing videos of herself waiting for Kayla to call her out, showing her resume. It was kind of weird. She was really trashing Kayla. Not trashing because she didn't directly insult her or anything, but it was a really weird dynamic. I've never heard of anything negative between their relationship. They were training partners. They were friends. You know, they never had to worry about fighting each other, so they would help each other out in their training camps, PFL for Kayla, UFC for Amanda. I've listened to a lot of Kayla interviews, and I've never heard her necessarily talk trash or do anything like what Amanda was doing. And let us not forget, Amanda Nunes is retired, so it was a little weird, but maybe she just sees how much help that women's bantamweight needs right now. The GOAT, right, wants to come back home. There's no better way to do it. If Kayla beats Pennington, that is the way. And now we go to the early prelims to cap off the discussion. Jalen Turner almost finished Moicano early, but Hinato came back strong and knocks out Jalen Turner late into the second round with ground and pound strikes. Moicano was number 13. He just beat number 10, Jalen Turner, the first underdog of the card that won throughout the night and one of only three total that won on the night. And he did it in very convincing fashion. He will move into the top 10. Money Moicano, man, he gets the job done. And when he gets the microphone, he's going to let people know how he's feeling. He's trying to build his podcast, build his YouTube, and build his bank account, man. So you got to respect it. He's just now getting the biggest moments and fights. Maybe not biggest fights, but the most amount of eyeballs on him that he's had. But he's been in the UFC for what will be 10 years come later on in December. He dates back to 2014. So it's unbelievable. Two different weight classes that he's competed in. Three straight wins. None bigger than this one over Jalen Turner. Money Moicano, top 10 opponent next. Women's strawweight, I mentioned this in the title fight discussion. Jessica Andrade, Marina Rodriguez, great fight. I told people in the breakdown leading into this fight that it was going to be very good, a low-key sleeper on this UFC 300 card. They went back and forth on the feet for 15 straight minutes. Big moments for both, but Andrade squeezes out the split decision victory after a 2-3 five-fight year in 2023. She's won two in a row. She finished Mackenzie Dern. She beat Marina Rodriguez. She's number four in the strawweight division right now. Again, maybe she gets a rematch with Zhang Weili for the next title fight. I hope it's Tatiana Suarez getting the next title fight. Therefore, let's take a little look here, because I feel like Jessica Andrade has literally fought everyone there is to fight. She's already fought Leigh Moshe not that long ago. Maybe she fights Virna Jandiroba. That's a fight that's fresh, that hasn't happened before. That seems to make sense. I am okay with that fight. Virna beat Mackenzie Dern, if I'm not mistaken, in her last fight. Let me confirm that really quick. Sorry, I was way off. I literally was five fights off. I don't know why I thought Mackenzie Dern was Virna's last fight. She lost to Mackenzie Dern, but since then has won 4 out of 5, with the only loss coming to Amanda Ribas. But Virna's won 3 fights in a row. Angela Hill, Marina Rodriguez, who Jessica Andrade just beat, and she beat Lupi Godinez a couple weeks ago in Atlantic City. So yes, I think that's what you should do. That's the picture right now at strawweight. Tatiana Suarez, Zhang Weili for the title. Virna Jandiroba versus Jessica Andrade, number 4 versus number 5. Winner of that gets the next title shot. Boom. Easy peasy. UFC matchmaking. Call your boy. We go to the OG fight of the night. Bobby King Green beats Jim Miller. It was a bloody mess. And I had this fight to not go the distance, and boy, did it, and it was hard to watch. It sucks that Jim Miller didn't get the victories on 100, 200, and 300, but he still fought on all three of the centennial cards for the UFC. It's a feat that no one has ever accomplished and can never accomplish ever again. And for that reason, Jim Miller's a one of one, man, a Hall of Famer when he decides to hang up the gloves. But Bobby Green, what a great bounce back. He just got brutally knocked out in December by Jalen Turner, but comes back here and just, for the most part, has one-way traffic with Jim Miller, put on a striking clinic. Jim landed a couple big shots that had Bobby a little wobbled, but other than those, Bobby looked fantastic. And last but not least, the curtain jerker, the greatest opening fight of all time in UFC history, number 8 bantamweight Davison Figueiredo is now 2-0 at 135 pounds as he submitted Cody No Love Garbrandt in the second round, 4 minutes and 2 seconds in. Very close first round. Cody, I felt, won the first round, did a little bit more damage. It wasn't a very action-packed round, but Cody looked good. He looked cool, calm, and composed. Figueiredo didn't look like he was able to pull the trigger or get anything going. But in round two, he took down Cody early. He had him in an arm triangle choke for a very long time. Cody fought out of it, almost got back to his feet, but Figgy decided to use his jiu-jitsu and grappling skills, keep Cody down, and lock in the rear naked choke that forced Cody Garbrandt to tap. That's two big wins for Figgy Rob Font and now Cody Garbrandt, a former champion, probably one win away from entering the title picture at 135 pounds. All these matchups are fresh for Davison because he's a new addition to the weight class. I mean, any of them. Give me Song Yadong. Give me Henry Cejudo. Give me Marlon Vera. Give me Peter Yan. Give me Corey Sandhagen. Any single one of them is not only a fantastic fight, I think it should be a main event level fight, and it has huge implications for the bantamweight title picture. And I'm not getting straight into the fight announcements, okay? I know that's what you guys want to hear, but I have to give the PFL their flowers. Week two went down. It was light heavyweights and lightweights. And I'm not going to go, you know, super in depth fight by fight because I haven't done that the last week. I didn't get to, so I don't want to, you know, give one card more love than the other, et cetera, et cetera. But I have to just mention this because this was one of the best PFL cards ever. All five light heavyweight fights ended in first round stoppages, which means all five fighters are tied for the point system with 6 points apiece. Impa Kasanganai got a knockout. Rob Wilkinson got a knockout. Josh Silveira got a knockout. Antonio Carlos Jr. got a submission. Dovlatstan Yagamichirim, I tried to say that too fast, but I felt like I nailed the first name. Yagshimuradov got a first round knockout. It was unbelievable. I think that makes things very exciting for the 205-pound division. I still lean with Impa Kasanganai to go back-to-back, but an amazing start to the 205-pound season. And for the lightweights, guys, Clay Collard and Patricky Pitbull fought Friday night. I think people don't know that that fight happened because of how massive UFC 300 was. Amazing fight from start to finish. Clay Collard got a finish a minute and 32 seconds into the second round after being knocked down and almost finished by Patricky in round number one. Shout out to the PFL. They retweeted the Below Average Joe's MMA show tweet about this fight. So if you haven't already, be sure to go follow us on, I guess it's X, not Twitter, but you get the point. Because what is it called? Is it called an X? It's a tweet still, right? Anyway, then the rest of the lightweight, Michael Dufort defeated Mads Burnell. We go down a little further. Brent Primus, former Bellator contender, beat Michael Chandler, etc. Beat Bruno Miranda by a submission. Godzi Rabadanov beat Solomon Renfro. Elvin Espinoza had a huge come-from-behind victory with a flying knee knockout. So it was just a big night. There were 11 fights and only one decision. There were 10 finishes on this PFL card. If you didn't get to watch any of it because you were caught up in the UFC 300, you know, press conferences, weigh-ins, watching the fights on Saturday, go show the PFL some love. This was a very good card. Pretty much there's no skips. These are all great fights. Highly recommend. I'm looking forward to week three to cap off the first portion of the PFL 2024 regular season. But this is what I've been waiting to discuss. The fight announcements that Dana White announced in the UFC 300 post-fight press conference are not to be slept on. Dana White blushing, going nuts about how insane UFC 300 was, how much of a success it was, all the media asking him all the questions. And then he all of a sudden goes, oh, I have a couple of notes I want to discuss. I'm like, oh, so he's going to talk about some more, maybe like records that got broken or something. Because he usually comes on at the beginning, talks about the gate and the attendance, you know, pay-per-view trends, social media trends, yada, yada, yada. But instead, no. He goes, I got some notes to discuss. And then racks off these three fight announcements. UFC 302 Newark, New Jersey has its main event and it has its co-main event. The co-main event is a five-rounder between former champion and middleweight contender Sean Strickland and Paulo Costa. That is number one versus number seven, a fight that has not happened thus far in the light, or in the light, what was I going to say, lightweight? Yeah, the main event's on the brain, Dominic. In the middleweight division, Sean Strickland coming off of losing his championship in January to Dricus du Plessis, Paulo Costa coming off of his fight with Robert Whittaker. But the main event, as I said, UFC 300, the UFC had this fight ready. Just in case UFC 300 didn't quite work out the way that they maybe thought, and it didn't work out that way, Justin Gaethje didn't win. Armand and Charles wasn't like a crazy big finish or anything. And for that reason, the main event for the lightweight championship, UFC 302 Newark, New Jersey, Islam Makhachev, Dustin the Diamond Poirier, the undisputed lightweight championship of the world, will close the show June 1st of 2024. Dustin Poirier coming off of a huge knockout at UFC 299 against Benoit St. Denis, and Islam Makhachev is the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world right now. He has not lost a fight since October of 2015. He's defended his belt twice against the greatest featherweight of all time, Alexander Volkanovski, including a knockout last October. So this is going to be his first title defense against an actual lightweight. So that's going to be interesting. And there's a storyline because Dustin Poirier lost to Islam's mentor, Khabib Nurmagomedov, in an undisputed title fight back in 2019. I was on a plane heading back from Kansas when Dustin lost that fight in Abu Dhabi in September of that year to Khabib by submission. Can he right the ship? Will it be third time's the charm for Dustin Poirier in undisputed title fights? Will he beat Islam Makhachev, or Islam Makhachev continue his legacy of being the protege of Khabib and maybe even a better version of Khabib? Let me know what you think of these fight announcements for UFC 302. Oh, wait, and did I forget? Conor McGregor versus Michael Chandler was also announced by Uncle Dana. UFC 303, International Fight Week, June 29th, Las Vegas, Nevada, 170-pound welterweight fight. Conor McGregor is back. This will be Conor's first fight in just under 3 full years after he broke his leg in July at International Fight Week 2021 at UFC 264. He will be back 39 pay-per-view cards later to take on Michael Chandler, who, in his own right, has been sitting out on the shelf since November of 2022, waiting, chopping at the bit to fight Conor McGregor. He wasn't willing to give up this opportunity against Conor McGregor. It really does suck, though. Like, as a fan, the fact that on April 24th, Michael Chandler is going to turn 38 years old. He's going to step into the cage June of 2024, having not fought in a year and a half, but with no injuries or anything major that had happened. That really does suck. But I'm glad he's getting this opportunity. It's going to be the biggest payday of his life. It's going to be the biggest stage of his life, the most eyeballs of his life. And if Michael Chandler wins, everyone's going to know who Iron Mike is. This fight's not going to be boring. This is going to be unbelievable. This is going to be one of the biggest fights of the year. The UFC is on fire right now and announcing the return of Conor McGregor after the monumental UFC 300 card. The UFC knows exactly what they're doing with this well-oiled machine. All three of these fight announcements are unbelievable. Two pay-per-views in June, two cannot miss events. So that is it. Wow, these past two episodes have just been massive on the, you know, channel here, the Blur Average Joe's MMA Show podcast. Thank you all for tuning in. It has been a great past couple months for growth, and I hope that it will continue moving forward into the second quarter of 2024. Thank you for any and all support. I hope you had a great weekend. I hope you have a great week upcoming. I don't know if there will be an episode Friday and Monday coming up. All we have is PFL. There's no UFC. So I'm going to just have to monitor the news in a fight announcement situation. If enough comes out, I will have an episode here. But if not, there may be another Friday, Monday off. And then we'll wait until I think the next fight night card. I'm blanking on what it is. But there's a fight night card coming up in 2 weeks for the UFC. They got a week off. This has been like 12 straight weeks of fights. So that's all she wrote. I will catch you in the next episode.